Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Jeeves, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Hey, good evening, everybody. How's everybody doing this evening? I hope you're doing well, getting ready for the Thanksgiving holiday. Welcome to episode 17 of the Voice of Indie podcast. I'm your host, as the guy just said, Beam Weeks. And with me, as always, over there in the far, far corner, Mr. Stephen Jeeves. How you doing tonight, Stephen?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you, Beam?
I can't complain. I'm looking forward to hanging out with the family tomorrow and just having a good time.
Staying close to Michigan, huh?
Yeah, I'll be traveling up north and partaking of the turkey. Gobble, gobble.
Well, tonight I'm live from St. Louis. I'm on the 25th floor overlooking the Missouri River. Came to spend a few days and meet a friend over the holiday. Today, we're having a special show since it's the eve before a USA holiday. Special edition, no guest. We're not going to play any commercials. All we're going to do is talk about concerts. Yes, concerts. You want to explain that, Beam?
Yeah, basically what we're going to, because we do this a lot. We chat amongst each other, and a lot of times when we'll be prepping the show and getting ready to have the guest on, we'll start talking music and concerts and things with the guests. And there's just a lot of common connection, common grounds, and just fun memories. So we'll be talking about some of our favorite concerts, ones that we saw, the ones that we missed and wish we would have seen, and just concert stories. And it's all kinds of genres. I've been to predominantly heavy metal concerts, but I've been to some that were decidedly not metal that I enjoyed just as well. So, and we'll be taking a little time to share a little bit about different categories. So hopefully this is kind of a cool little setup here tonight.
Yeah, we're hoping to encourage a few of you to call in. Also, the phone number is 516-453-9902. 516-453-9902. Call in. Tell us what your most memorable or noteworthy concert experience was.
Yeah, and you can also, if you don't have access to the phone or you can't get to the phone right now, you can use Twitter, hashtag Fresh Ink Group. Hashtag Fresh Ink Group. Question, comment, list your own favorite concert, your top five favorite concerts, whatever. Become involved. That's what we're looking to do. Share stories, swap stories, concert stories.
So in order to try to inject some semblance of organization to this, we sat down for about 4 minutes and wrote down a bunch of categories, concert-related categories, and thought, okay, we'll just kind of plod through these and see what ideas come up from these. So if you're thinking of calling in, too, see if any of these spark an idea for you. First, we thought we'd start with concerts that we have attended together, which is not very many, just a few. The first real concert each of us has ever seen, concert we've traveled the longest to see, a concert that we didn't intend to see but wound up being glad we did, brushes with fame, opportunities to meet famous musicians, orchestral moments, orchestral concerts, or our experiences with orchestras that were noteworthy. Yeah, I'm really more of an orchestra guy, so you'll probably hear more from me there. And next category, metal concerts. Beam is more of a metalhead than I am, so I think he's probably got a lot more to say there. Next would be, who have we seen the most? Who have we waited the longest to see? What are the best hybrid concerts? That's things put together from several parts of different bands. Best multi-build concerts or festivals. Best light stage shows. The best seats that we've ever had. And what else, Beam?
And best alt concerts. And by that, it doesn't necessarily mean alternative concerts. It means acoustic, a band that usually is, you know, rock plugged in, they go unplugged, acoustic or solo. There's an artist in the band did a solo show. Best tribute concerts. Those could be the tribute bands and, you know, tributes for fallen ones or just some really cool bands that play other people's music. Best concerts by bands not from the U.S. or the UK. Better than expected concerts. Disappointing concerts. Almost missed concerts. No longer with us. Those people that have been in bands or performers that have passed on. Best souvenirs. Best concert movie or TV performance. Best places to see concerts. Concerts you wish you had seen. And concerts you still want to see. And maybe favorites to see. And what's your best ever most favorite concert? So that's the categories we'll be touching on tonight. And like we said, you know, feel free to call in with your own. Add to the conversation.
So, Beam, why don't you start us off with the concerts we've attended together?
Okay, well, like you said, there's only been a few, but the first one we checked out together was Black Jacket Symphony. This is a tribute band, but they don't just do one particular group. They have a stable of musicians, and we saw them together when they did the Sgt. Pepper's album, which was really cool because they come out with the Alabama Symphony Orchestra played with them. So they did all of the Sgt. Pepper's album in order. Then they take a little break and then they came back out and did all of these other Beatles hits. Now these same guys will do a Led Zeppelin show or some of the other ones that you've seen, Stephen.
For Black Jacket Symphony, probably my favorites would be like Pink Floyd. They've got they do a wall version concert, and then they do one that's based on Dark Side of the Moon. They've got a lot of good ones like Bowie, Journey.
Yeah, these guys, yeah, and they're excellent musicians. They got different singers, so they know how to match the voices up too. Another cool tribute band was the Musical Box. Now, these guys are dedicated to the classic Peter Gabriel era Genesis. And we saw those guys in Detroit. Excellent show. And we saw also in Detroit, Chick Corea. And this was Chick's acoustic band, which was just phenomenal.
Yeah, that's Chick Corea with Dave Weckl on drums, John Patitucci on bass. And they're actually putting together a show for a very limited number of people in Florida about 3 weeks from now, which I intend to be down there seeing myself.
Woohoo! And, of course, we saw last year, 2019, on his farewell tour at the Incredible Pine Knob in Clarkston, Michigan, we saw Peter Frampton. And, man, just a phenomenal show. And the opening act was Jason Bonham's Led Zeppelin experience, or Led Zeppelin evening.
Copyright purposes.
Yeah. Well, he had called it Led Zeppelin experience, but from what I understand is that Led Zeppelin they were putting together something that they wanted to use that Led Zeppelin experience for. So they contacted him. He was gracious enough to say, yeah, sure, it's yours. But definitely a good show, fantastic show. Sold out. Frampton was on point the whole night. For those who don't know, it was his farewell tour because he's got a neurological disorder and it's going to come to a point where he'll no longer be able to play guitar. And it hasn't affected him yet, but he knows it's coming. So he wanted to go out and do one farewell tour and play everywhere while he's still at the top of his game. And let me tell you, he was at the top of his game.
Yeah, phenomenal show. Okay, our next category, the first real concert we ever saw. In my case, it was Black Sabbath doing Master of Reality tour. Man, that's got to be, what, early 70s, 73, 2, something like that?
Yeah,
way back in
somewhere
there. So
in
Black
there.
Sabbath. Black Sabbath would have been my first one, and their opening act was Spooky Tooth and Bedlam. So the three of them together.
My first concert was Blue Oyster Cult. Speaking of Black and Blue, they did a concert film together, Black Sabbath and Blue Oyster Cult, years ago, back in the early 80s. But yeah, Blue Oyster Cult in 1980, the fall of 1980, that was my first show, and it, you know, that's what set me off on a life of, okay, who's next? Who's coming to town next? All right. Traveled the longest to see?
That's kind of a tough one for me, because I do a lot of like going down to Florida or up to Michigan to see concerts, and there'd be a whole bunch of them to fall into those. I think the one that's probably the farthest for me, back when I was not even 30 yet, I think, a friend tipped me off that Jean-Luc Ponty was going to be playing at a club in San Francisco, a small club that was like his favorite place, and he had planned to be playing there for the entire week rehearsing music for an upcoming tour that he was putting together. So I purposely booked myself a job so I could get my expenses paid for and flew out to San Francisco to see Jean-Luc Ponty in a small club. Jean-Luc Ponty is a jazz, fusion jazz violinist, and as good as they get out there. So if you ever get a chance to see Jean-Luc Ponty or listen to his music, I highly recommend.
Yeah, Jean-Luc Ponty. Yeah, Jean-Luc Ponty, he was a regular here in East Lansing. He used to play out at on campus at the Wharton Center at Michigan State every year. It was like a summer tradition. And I never went out to go see him, because when he was doing that for a decade, I was pretty much a solid metalhead. So if I was going to go to see a concert, it was usually metal. But the longest I've traveled to see a show was probably the Black Jacket Symphony show in Alabama. Went down there from Michigan and caught those guys. And I've seen, being here in Michigan, I went to Ohio a couple of times to see another band, which I'll talk about later, a band called New York. But most of the concerts I've seen have either been in Michigan or in Florida, where I lived for a couple of years back in the 80s. So, but for me, yeah, Black Jacket Symphony.
Okay, concert that we didn't intend to see, but are glad that we did. I got to thinking about that on the drive to St. Louis today, and I came up with probably six or eight that were like, you know, I've always thought if I ever get a chance, I'll see them, but I don't go out of my way to do it. And then turned out to have a lot of fun seeing the Steve Miller Band just a few years ago. While Steve is still around and still doing his thing, and I mean doing it well, I'd never seen him before. And I mean, I grew up with Steve Miller music, and that was one of those concerts where every song was like, oh, that was Steve Miller too. And I just had a great time being back in the 70s and my youth, and then seeing a guy who was so good and just enjoying it. I got taken one time to see a concert by some guys, and I had no idea who it was going to be. Turned out to be the Electric Light Orchestra was the main act, with the Climax Blues Band as the opening act. And it was like, I didn't know who either of those was. And it was like, whoa, to this day, I'm still talking about that concert, aren't I? Queen. Friends gave me a ticket to see a Queen concert one time. I liked Queen, but never went out of my way to buy tickets. And we wound up sitting in the fourth row for the Night at the Opera tour. And I was like, my line of sight was right down Freddie Mercury's piano keys. I'm a keyboard player, so I was just blown away by that. Freddie Mercury's charisma. I sat there thinking, you know, Peter Gabriel, there's a couple of people who have this kind of power over an audience, and he was incredible. But I think my number one answer on this concert I didn't intend to see, but glad I did, I went to see Yes at an outdoor festival. And one of the opening acts for him was the young blonde-haired kid named Peter Frampton, who was just starting to get some airplay on some of his songs. And he's out there testing out this new material. You know, do you feel like, you know, and, oh, man. That was one of those where you didn't even know who he was, but you'll never forget him. And being able to see that farewell tour as a bookend to seeing this great man and his career, that meant a lot to me. So I had a bunch on that one. How about you,
Ben? Wow. Yeah, you had a whole pile of them. Well, I'm going to stick to the one that I remember that was, I didn't have any notion to see them, didn't really want to see them. I was Hall & Oates, and this is back in 81, and it was on the Private Eyes tour. I was a metalhead at that time, and like I said a little while ago, if it wasn't metal, I didn't really want to go to see it. My stepmother, my father's second wife, she bought tickets for my younger brother. He was a big Hall & Oates fan. My sister was a Hall & Oates fan. She got a ticket, and then my older brother. And I said I didn't want to go to see it because it wasn't, you know, AC/DC or, you know, one of those metal bands. But then my older brother ended up getting invited to something. I don't even remember what it was now. And that ticket, rather than seeing it go to waste, I said, all right, I'll go. And, man, I'm glad I did. This was Hall & Oates at the top of their game, the Private Eyes album, probably their biggest album. And they were one of the biggest bands in the world at this time. And the band that they had with them, they had G.E. Smith on lead guitar. And he would later go on to be the musical director for Saturday Night Live for many, many years. He was also briefly married to Gilda Radner from Saturday Night Live. And just a phenomenal show. Donnie Iris. I don't know if too many people out there remember Donnie Iris. Kind of looked like Buddy Holly, but he had some really cool songs. This guy was, I saw him a couple of times in concert, and this was the first time I saw him, and he was phenomenal. Just the way he talked to the audience in between songs, and he's an opening act. But man, I mean, he just put together a really good show, and all around it was entertaining, and I am so glad that I was able to go to see that show. So that's mine. There's a couple of others, but that's the big one right there. I didn't become a huge Hall & Oates fan after that, but I they got my respect. They truly got my respect.
Exactly. You got to see a lot deeper than what you're just hearing on the surface all the time.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And it was a for me to hear this, as they call it, Blue-Eyed Soul, live in concert, because up to then, all I had seen were metal concerts. And this was the first non-metal show that I went to, and I was impressed.
Okay. Yeah. It's like seeing a symphony orchestra for the first time. It's like, wow, that's what it's all about. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. So now we got Brushes with Fame, meeting musicians and stuff. And I've had some fun on this one. Billy Bob Thornton, and you all know him as a movie star, TV star, Fargo. I mean, Sling Blade,
French Fry Taters.
He's got a band called the Boxmasters, and he's the lead singer and does a lot of the writing of the music and whatnot. And they are fantastic. They're just, I don't know, what genre would you say? Beam, hard rock, blues?
Yeah, kind of a bluesy rock. Yeah,
bluesy rock.
There's a little bit of everything in there. Some of the Americana kind of music and hill music, as they used to call it.
Yeah, he's got some good musicians with him, and they go around sometimes in the South and play charity shows to help raise money for groups, organizations, and whatnot. And they come to Huntsville, Alabama, every year and do a thing at the Merrimack, the Full Box Masters show. And the first time I got to see that, my date and I parked in the back right next to his tour bus. And after the show, we went out there, and he came out at the same time coming out the back door. And all of a sudden, we just found ourselves standing there with Billy Bob Thornton. And he said, well, how the hell are you? You know, so we stood there and talked for like 10 minutes and just had fun. It was pretty cool. And, you know, tried not to act like you're starstruck and all that. But at any rate, so then the next year, a friend of mine who lives in Florida was in town. I had Boxmasters tickets. So we went down there, parked in the back by the tour bus, and I joked, wouldn't that be funny if it happened again? It did. And he came out, hung out with us, and his bass player took pictures of us posing with Billy Bob or whatever, and it was a lot of fun. So Boxmasters is one of mine. Another one is the band Gentle Giant, United Kingdom of art rock, kind of a group that if you like art rock, especially classic art rock styles with some classical kinds of musings and things mixed in there, check out Gentle Giant. They've got a whole bunch of albums, a lot of good material. I saw them at a dive in Detroit, Harpo's. You've been to Harpo's, haven't you?
I've been to Harpo's, yeah.
Oh, man, that place
is a dive.
Oh, yeah, you stick to the floor. And
there's no heater. there's no furnace and no AC. So in the summer you burn up, and in the winter you're shivering, and it smells like beer and urine, and it's a nasty old theater.
In a really bad neighborhood. But Gentle Giant, this kind of prim art rock nouveau band out of England, is coming to the United States and trying to promote their newest album, and they book them in Harpo's. And I couldn't think of anybody I knew who'd like that band who would even go to Harpo's, except, of course, me and a group of my friends. So we went down there, and like nobody showed up. There were like 30, 40 people in the audience. And they came out, and it's like, oh, well, okay, this is it, huh? You know, and I said, hey, but we know your music, man. You know, and we started calling out songs, stuff like that. They got excited, wound up playing like a 2.5-hour show and had a blast. Afterwards, a few of us went back to their hotel with them. And, you know, maybe some things got passed around, and we just kind of hung out for 2 hours and had a blast. But my best one on this is my all-time music hero is Chick Corea. Chick Corea, the modern jazz keyboard piano player who does every kind of jazz styling there is. I've had the opportunities to have dinner with him. I've been backstage with him a couple of times, had pictures taken with him, had picture autograph, stuff like that. And one time I took a teenager who was a budding drummer down to Akron, Ohio to see the Chick Corea Electric Band, because the manager said we could come upstage after the show and let him meet Dave Weckl, who was his drummer hero. And we did that. And I hung out on the stage with Chick Corea for a bit while he sat at Dave Weckl's kit and got drum lessons from him. So we just had the time of our life. And every time Chick Corea has been like, oh yeah, hey, you know, and he knows who I am. Now, if you're good at it, you can pretend that, but you know, you never know. Now, Beam, I know you've met a few.
Yeah, the time back in the day when I hung out with Jimi Hendrix, we were just kind. No, I'm just kidding. Nothing like
about
that.
You
but
a lot.
my brushes with fame, but you know, they're not like huge superstars, but. The first one was I went to see the 80s metal band Night Ranger in concert, and great show. I wasn't a super huge fan of the group, but they were heavy on their first two albums, and this was the tour for their second album, Midnight Madness. So we go to see them, and after the show, we're thinking, all right, it was outdoors, and we thought if we go around back, there's a fence back there, maybe we'll get to, you know, see the band. And we get back there, and their guitarist Jeff Watson was back there, and we just, you know, my cousin's yelling, hey, Jeff, and he came over and talked with us for about 15-20 minutes. We got autographs on our shirts because we didn't have anything else to write on, so I gave him my shirt and he signed my shirt, and I still have that autograph. So that was kind of cool. And then a couple years later, after I graduated from high school, I delivered pizzas that first summer after high school. And I'm getting these deliveries up to the local Hilton Hotel. And I noticed these tour buses in the parking lot. I find out that this is Jefferson Starship. And this was 86. So this is before they transformed into Starship with Sarah and We Built the City and all that. They were still Jefferson Starship. And they were playing a series of shows around Michigan. And they decided to stay there at that Hilton as their hub. And then each night they would drive to the various facilities across the mid-Michigan area. And we were out at the bar that night, my usual hangout, my club, the Silver Dollar Saloon, was the world-famous rock bar. I could go on and on about that place. But
He could.
Because I do. There was everybody play there, Aerosmith, Kiss, Rush, Triumph. But anyway, we were at the bar that night, and the guitarist of Jefferson Starship was there, Craig Chiquiso. And this guy played one of my all-time favorite guitar solos ever recorded. And that's for the song Save Your Love. And this wasn't a big hit. It was a deep track off of their Modern Times album from 81. And this solo, I mean, it's a fade out solo and it fades out, you know, the song, but he just shreds on it. And it's not anything you would typically hear from Jefferson Starship. And I wanted to go over there and talk to him, but he had a bunch of people around him. So, didn't worry about it. We left the bar and got to thinking, well, they're staying at the Hilton. Let's go up there and just, who knows, maybe we could run into somebody. And we literally almost did just that. We got there. The security saw us coming in. They're like, hey, what are you guys doing here? 2 o'clock in the morning, 2:30 in the morning. We hop on an elevator and go up to like the fourth floor, get off and take off running. And we got around the corner and almost barreled this guy over. And it was Craig Chiquiso. He sat there and talked to us for about 30 minutes. And I got to tell him that that guitar solo was like one of my all-time favorites. And this guy was, I mean, was truly appreciative because he's saying, you know, that's not a song that most people know. They don't even play that much in concert back then. So that was cool, getting to meet this guy and talk music with him, that one solo that to this day, I have that on my iPod, that song, and I still play it and just marvel at that solo. And then there was a young drummer by the name of Shannon Larkin. Most people know Shannon today for the last, I don't know, I guess 15 years. He's the drummer for Godsmack, and Godsmack's one of the biggest bands in the world right now. But before he was the drummer for Godsmack, and the band before that, he was in a band called Glassjaw. He was in a band called Wrathchild. And I saw those guys back in the 80s. They played at the Silver Dollar Saloon. They were a thrash metal band. Now, the Silver Dollar Saloon, they played, most of the bands were cover bands. So you knew most of the songs, and there was a dance floor and all that. These guys came in and played all of their own original stuff from their album. And like I said, it was thrash metal. You don't dance to thrash metal. You headbang to thrash metal. So the dance floor was full of headbangers. And the owner was like, you know, he makes his money off of people coming to drink and dance. So he fired the band after that first night. And we got invited. My girlfriend and I got invited back to the hotel. Got to hang out with the band and party with them. Not really partying. I mean, there was some beer and all that. But it was just sitting there and talking with Shannon, the drummer. We sat there and talked with him, you know, probably 3 hours. And the funny thing is, 4 o'clock in the morning rolls around and all their hotel rooms, they probably had, I guess, maybe 6 rooms between the band and their crew. And all these rooms were just overflowing with people. And here comes the night manager of this hotel, motel, actually. And this guy's missing one arm and he's got one of those hooks, pincher hooks on one arm. But he comes out with a sawed-off shotgun, and he's chasing everybody out. Get out of here now. If you're not booked in this room, get out.
So it's like a character in Smoke and Aces.
Yeah, something like that. So we left, and all right, it was cool. Got to hang with the drummer of Wrathchild. Shortly thereafter, Wrathchild had a copyright infringement hit against them because there was another British band called Wrathchild, so they changed their name to Wrathchild America. They released their second album and got some pretty big airplay on MTV at the time. And so they started showing up in the magazines. And there was an interview with them in the magazine. When I was 2 years later, I'm living in Florida, and I see them on the cover of the magazine. So I thought, I'm going to see what they got to say. And so I grabbed the magazine, bought it, and was reading it. And there they are talking about the one-armed sawed-off shotgun guy back in Lansing, Michigan. So that was kind of cool. But yeah, that's my brushes with fame. I mean, there was no Elvis Presley or anything in there, but.
Man, I've met Chick, but not the guy with the one arm and the sawed-off shotgun.
You didn't want to meet him, but hey, we have a caller. So you want to take a phone call?
Crook, go for it.
All right. Hello, caller. What is your name and where are you calling from?
This is Robert from Houston.
Hey, Robert from Houston. Is this Robert McKenzie?
Yes, it is.
Hey,
how
Robert.
How you doing?
I'm great. Looking forward to Thanksgiving tomorrow. Happy Thanksgiving, gentlemen.
Gobble,
hey,
gobble.
You too.
Happy Thanksgiving. So we know you've had some amazing concerts. Why don't you share some of yours?
Well, I'd like to meet that guy with the shotgun and the one arm. That sounds like a good character for The Chair, Volume 3.
Ooh, there you go.
2021, so I may have to get you to sign some papers on that. I've seen a few concerts. I heard your category, so I think I got a little something of all of it.
Yeah,
that fits in there. So There's no Chick Corea, although I think the UCLA band leader was called Nick Corea when I was there in the 70s. So that's how I first heard of Chick Corea, because there was a guy named Nick Corea who was leading that band. So, well, I'll just start. I got to fly with, first, the longest I've ever gone was Los Angeles to Boston. And I saw Spirit. My college roommate lived in Boston, man.
Ooh.
And we were at some little club on Beacon Hill. And we got there, and there was probably, like, you know, Gary said earlier, you know, a few people, but it started to fill up. But we're right next to, I'm next to the drummer, Ed Cassidy. And this guy, the bald guy, and this guy was like a concert drummer. He was like flicking the skins with his fingers and listening and tightening the keys for about 10 or 15 minutes. And then, of course, the mistake sitting next to Ed Cassidy was he did this sound check for it was like its own concert. And, you know, people were starting to drink and everybody, but I'm thinking, hey, we need to move back. But it was already packed. So that was great. What I remember was trying to get to Beacon Hill, because if you've ever been to Boston and a cab driver host doesn't know where they're going at night. You know, you could end up in Maine, but it was a phenomenal show. Randy California, it was at We Got Nothing to Hide, Fresh Garbage, Nature's Way, the whole thing. They probably played for 2 hours. It was great. But that's the longest I ever went. And then I was once on an airplane with Keith Moon from Los Angeles to Houston.
Wow.
Opening the tour. This is mentioned in The Chair, Volume 2, but the details are simply I got to sit with him at first class. We had seat 1A and 1B, and I was going to the concert. My high school quarterback, we had seats, and so I was flying back from UCLA, and it was that weekend, and Toots and the Maytals was to open. So I always thought that was funny. But anyway, I sat next to Keith Moon and his valet, McDougald. He's mentioned on Odds and Sods, where they all wear the football helmets, by the way. But this guy kept his wallet, his keys, his identification, his money. And Keith Moon, we're on a three-hour trip, and I'm astonished, you know. So I'm talking to he. Thank God I knew everything about the band, but he ends up demonstrating. They had a DC-10. It was Continental DC-10, and they had the pub, which is right behind first class, where people could come and get a drink and all that. So everybody starts wandering back there, and Keith Moon's sitting on a stool, and he's explaining the end of the song is over. I was done in the studio. But anyway, along about after dinner and a few drinks, Keith Moon, I counted the stewardess, the flight attendant, or I guess it used to be called steward. They were Continental had hostesses. That was cool. My dad married two of them. But
at the same time?
Long story short for you is, in fact, his second wife went to high school with Janis Joplin and the football coach Jimmy Johnson.
Ooh.
In Port Arthur Jefferson.
Port Arthur.
She broke out the annual once, and I'm going, oh, wow, yeah. There's Janis Joplin, Jimmy Johnson. This is crazy. But back to Keith Moon, it was just phenomenal. And he drank 25 Courvoisier cognacs, she told me. I had a few Jack Daniels, but I couldn't have them until we crossed the line over Texas from El Paso, because you had to be 21. And then I was still 20, but you could, when you got over Texas, 18 to drink. But then that pilot captain comes on and says, ladies and gentlemen, we're encountering ahead of us is a huge storm. We kind of anticipated this, but now it's really come to pass. So we're going to have to circle. And our first alternate is San Antonio. And our second one is Corpus Christi at an Air Force base or something. It's like almost one of these, you know, Texas torrential tropical depression. But anyway, long story shorter for you. Yes, Keith Moon was the nicest guy ever. He We flew another 2 hours on a 3-hour flight. We circled for 2 hours before they brought us into Houston. And so everybody's waiting on it because the plane's late. And Keith Moon gets up and he hugs all the hostesses. He waits and hugs all the pilots. He hugs me for being nice, asking him all these questions. And McDougal said, here you guys are going to the concert. Yeah, we are. And he goes, here's some backstage passes.
Wow.
So we went the next night. It was at the Houston Summit. And I'll get into the best seats I ever had. I don't know how we're doing on time. I'm rambling. But the thing was, we go back. I get off the plane, and there's my friend. He can't believe it. It's Keith Moon. I had no idea he'd be flying one. So that was totally – that blew him away as much as it did me. But that was a great concert. We were probably 15th row center. Because,
oh, wow.
You know, you used to race down and stand in – you actually had to stand in line for tickets at one time in the world.
Yeah,
I was there.
And we was going down to get a
spend the night.
Album.
Spend the night
in a bad neighborhood waiting for the box office to open.
Yeah.
But I went to the California Jam, and, man, that was nuts. You got there the day before. They had a line of traffic from Los Angeles out to Ontario Motor Speedway, which is east of town, and there's an airport there. It's kind of a one stop, and Continental DC-10s used to land there, and then they would ferry into Los Angeles another 50 miles. They couldn't carry passengers between there, but anyway, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Deep Purple, Black Sabbath, I think Seals and Crofts was there.
I know the Eagles were. Yeah.
It was just great. Earth, Wind, and Fire. They had something for every – but there were 300,000, 400,000 people. It was supposedly the largest crowd ever up until that time. And the night before, it was almost biblical. People were so messed up on substances. They were freaking out looking at these DC-10s landing every so often at Ontario, worrying – some people got on the left. They were worried that one was going to take out the crowd. So we kept moving up. The more people would move back, and I don't know how we did it. The day before it even came on, it was just – I think it was in April, but it was April of 74. It was just incredibly hot, and it was just Keith Emerson on a spinning piano.
Spinning outdoors.
I think that Deep Purple, I think they blew out all of the butane gas or whatever you use to do these smoke shows. But it was a great concert.
Yeah, they showed it
on
TV.
I got a few more I've been to. So yeah, I heard it was.
Was it Don Kushner's rock concert show?
Friday
night.
And I think Don Imus was the MC.
Okay.
The late Don Imus.
That was the first time I ever saw what Emerson, Lake, and Palmer looked like performing.
It was the only time I ever saw him.
Let me throw in here something real quick. We do have a comment on Twitter from Verwin Greenhoe. And he said, chiming in on first concerts, he says, my first concert was the original Jesus Christ Superstar in Chicago. What a show. That's cool.
That goes back a ways too.
Yeah.
I had that live album when I was probably
like
12,
30 AD, I think.
70, 71. Yeah. You didn't cut him off yet, Beam?
Your time is up, sir. Please deposit another quarter.
Okay. So the next category would be orchestral concerts. You want to move into that?
Yeah, orchestral concerts. That's a big one for me. When I was in high school, I had I liked some orchestral music. Pictures at an Exhibition by Mussorgsky, The Planets by Gustav Holst.
Oh, hey, Robert, you dropped off. You didn't have to hang up. We come back to you.
Oh.
So if you're still listening, you know, call back in.
He can call back. But anyway, a teacher heard me talking about that at school, and turned out that he had season tickets to the Detroit Symphony Orchestra, plus to several series of plays, musicals, and things like that. And he said a lot of times he had tickets for more than one show on a night. So he asked me, did I want to have his Detroit Symphony tickets that Saturday night? So I grabbed a friend who could drive, because I wasn't even old enough to drive yet. And we went down and saw the Detroit Symphony, And to this day, I've always had season tickets for whatever symphony that I lived nearest. I try not to miss those things. So I've seen quite a few of them. I've seen the pop stuff like Mannheim Steamroller and Trans-Siberian Orchestra. I've seen some great composers conduct their own music. I saw Aaron Copland do a Copland show with the Detroit Symphony the year he died. I saw Henry Mancini conduct the Detroit Symphony doing a Mancini Pops show, and he died right after that. I think it was like less than a month later. I've seen the great John Williams conduct his own music with two different orchestras, including the Boston Pops. And he was a lot of fun because he covers everything from Jaws to Star Wars to Harry Potter. I mean, this guy has, close to 30 Oscars, it is, Beam?
Yeah,
something like that. Just for
new
movie music alone. But I always see that kind of stuff. I've seen some great soloists be with orchestras like Andre Segovia or Carlos Montoya on guitar.
Segovia would have been one. Man, I'd have loved to have seen Segovia.
Yeah, I also saw him just do a solo show in Hill Auditorium in Ann Arbor. He just came out with his guitar and sat on a stool and played for 2 hours and didn't speak a word of English, you know, just
that's what I would like
nod.
To see. Just
and
like
tell
that.
Us the name of the song. Yeah, exactly. But my funnest one on that, I think, is way back early when I was a college student, I had season tickets to the Detroit Symphony. And a friend and I went downtown to see the concert. And all I knew was that the main act was going to be a cello concerto. And it was some Asian sounding name was going to be the soloist. Didn't know that. I think it was Stravinsky, but I didn't know the piece. And I didn't know the soloist. And it was like, hey, didn't matter. We're going down there and see a show. And when it came time for the second half of the show and the cello concerto, this little Asian-looking kid who turns out was like 13 or 14 but looked like 10, hardly any bigger than the cello, came out, sat on a stool, propped that cello up in front of him, smiled at the audience, nodded at the conductor, and then became one with that instrument and just blew that audience away. That kid had a gift that was astounding. And it turned out that was Yo-Yo Ma, and it was his first tour when he came to the United States and was being introduced to American audiences. So that's a lot of fun. I like telling that story. What about you,
wow.
Beam?
The only one that I've ever really seen I had mentioned this earlier, Black Jacket Symphony playing the Beatles music, but they had the Alabama Symphony Orchestra with them, because on that Sgt. Pepper's album, you've got all those great strings, Eleanor Rigby, and She's Leaving Home.
Song.
I mean, just I love She's Leaving Home. That's just a great song.
Because
got all the strings, and even Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, there's some strings in there to start it off. But going to see a symphony orchestra live like that, there's a power there. It's not like some acoustic show. There's a power there. You feel it. The same kind of energy that you would at an electric show. So, that was kind of cool. And I throw this in. I saw an opera once, a legit opera at Wharton Center. I was probably 12 years old, 13. I guess probably 12. And it was Carmen.
Changed your life.
No, it didn't. It was the Italian touring company that put it on, and it was a cool experience, but it didn't change my life. Seeing, some of my favorite bands changed my life. But we do have another caller, and I believe this is Verwayne Greenhill. So let's take this. Hello, Verwayne.
Hey, how are we doing?
Hey.
Doing pretty good. What are some of your favorite concert moments? Snow.
Well,
yeah, you're.
I got to see. I got to see Chicago. In Chicago, I got to see Chicago.
Ooh.
And that was before. Who was the guy who accidentally shot himself there? That was not
Terry,
too long before that happened.
Terry.
Yeah, Terry.
Yeah.
Yes.
Terry. I'm forgetting his last name now.
But I also saw Jesus in late 1970. I was a freshman in college, and I got to go down and watch the original Jesus Christ Superstar, and the light show that went with that was just absolutely breathtaking. But when my first wife was a traveling nurse, we went to
a traveling nurse
in San Francisco. Oh yes, that's good money. If you
okay,
where you would work 6 to 12 week things or stints. We got to go all over Florida.
Gotcha.
That's how I got to live in Florida. Is we would move every 90 days.
Wow.
Port St. Lucie, Miami, Tampa, Orlando, Ocala, you name it, we were there. But we went to San Francisco. Actually, we lived in San Jose, so when they asked, do you know the way to San Jose? Yes, I've been there. Went to see Jackson Browne. But my best thing was not a concert. Back in early spring of 1983, I was out on the road, and I had to stop, and I had to call my sister, who lived just out to the west of Greenville. You know, if you're from Michigan, you know where Greenville is.
I know
Michigan
that.
Just,
is that Upper Peninsula?
Just north of Grand Rapids.
No, it's just
north of Grand Rapids, about 30 miles. But she lived out on a tiny little lake, Lincoln Lake. And I called her, and she says, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm such and such. And she says, you need to come to my house. And I said, well, I haven't got time. She says, wait a minute. And I hear this, and he says, dude, you need to come out to your sister's house. And I'm going, he handed the phone back. He says, I can't tell you, just come. And I got out there, and it was Bob Seger. Seger was taking a rest. You know that journey he made there to Jackson Hole. And then he ended up coming out and doing that song, Roll Me Away.
Yeah.
He made the journey, the trip to Jackson Hole. Right. Well, I got to hear that before it was released. He
Ooh.
Had two or three guys
wow.
from his band, and they played that in my sister's living room. And
wow.
just outside of Greenville. And
That's...
he is a lot of bands, you go to and you listen to them, and they're nowhere near what they sound like on an album. But Seger always was.
Yeah. And for
so
those people
Jackson
who are
Brown.
Those people who aren't from Michigan, Bob's from Michigan. He's from Ann Arbor. And in these parts, he's Uncle Bob. I mean, we've known about
yep.
Bob
yes.
since before he was ever national. I mean, this guy's he's been around forever, early 60s. And he
yep.
gave Glenn Frey from Eagles his big break. Glenn Frey had recorded
yes.
With Seger back in the late 60s. And when it was time to hit the road, Frey was only 17, and Mama Frey said he got going on the road. So Bob told him to keep working on his guitaring and keep writing songs. And when the tour ended, Glenn Frey was of age, and he wanted to hook back up with Bob Seger's band. And Bob said, well, with the music you're writing, you need to be out in Southern California. He said, there's something going on out there with this whole country rock movement. And that's what sent Glenn Frey to California, where he met Don Henley, and, you know, they backed up Linda Ronstadt for an album and the tour.
And
the
rest kind of fit together, too, didn't they?
Yes, they did. Exactly.
I saw Timothy Schmidt when he came in late 79, and he did that solo, I Can't Tell You Why.
I Can't Tell You Why.
That was
my favorite Eagles song right there.
Right.
And
I watched
more so than the harder rock and stuff.
Yep.
Now, when Verwaine started telling that story, I was betting in my mind that it was going to lead to Alice Cooper, not Seger. So I lost my own bet. another Michigan rocker.
Yes, an icon.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Well, we're going
to. I used
gears.
To. I lived on that triangle right there. Boy, you could be any place. Lansing. Grand Rapids, Detroit, Chicago, Cincy. I went to a lot of different concerts in there, and it was great. But my best thing
yeah.
was meeting Bob Seger up close and personal.
Yeah, that's cool. I grew up with Seger because my dad was such a huge fan, and I've got a ton of Bob Seger CDs here. And I play them still to this day. I play them a lot, and when I play them, I'm visiting with my dad again. I mean, that's my dad's passed away, and it just brings back that memory and of summers sitting on our front porch when we had this farm out in Williamston, and he would have the stereo cranked up with Bob Seger playing, and we'd be sitting on the front porch just, you know, having a lazy summer afternoon.
I have Roll Me Away as my ringtone to my cell phone. It's for the part where he's going, you know, I could go east, I could go west. And when I come back from downstate and go back over the Mac, that's a given song that we got to play on the radio as I head north. So
cool. Well, thanks for
chiming
in. Thank you,
gentlemen. Hope you both have a good Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
you too,
Irwin.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling.
Stay warm up there.
Oh, I'm trying. It's not working, but I'm trying.
Okay.
Take care.
All right. Now, let's switch gears here. The next category is metal concerts. And you saw the Masters, the godfathers of metal, Black Sabbath. That was your first concert. I've seen a ton of concerts, mostly metal.
Mostly metal.
So I'll say this. I've seen Iron Maiden 3 times back in the 80s in their heyday when they were these. The first time I saw them was 1982. They were actually third on the bill of this is what the 80s was like and even the 70s. You could go to a concert where it wasn't all, you know, the three bands there, they weren't all the same genre. It wasn't all metal or it wasn't all folk or whatever. You would go there and it would be like when the first time I saw Iron Maiden, they were opening the show. They were just starting to really break in America. They had, it was the first tour they did with their singer, their second singer, Bruce Dickinson. He's the one that got them over the hump and made them one of the biggest bands in the world. And they still are.
Where are they from?
England. They're from, England. They're from England and okay. London. And this was also the last tour they did with their original drummer, Clive Burr. Clive got sacked at the end of this tour, the last few dates, because he was a partier and he was drinking and it started carrying over onto the stage. And, you know, he was getting a little sloppy there towards the end of that tour. But they opened for Rainbow and 38 Special. Now, Rainbow was Ritchie Blackmore's band that he formed after
Deep Purple
broke up. So Rainbow was very much in that same vein as classic British rock. And then 38 Special was American Southern rock. And then Iron Maiden was British. They were straight off of the new wave of British heavy metal. And so that was just a fantastic show. Then I saw him a year later with the new drummer, Nicol McBrain, who's still there. And that was in 83. With Fastway opening for them in a little Canadian band called Coney Hatch. Coney Hatch never really blew up or, you know, did
never heard
great,
of them.
But they had a couple of really good albums back in the day. And Fastway, of course, was Fast Eddie Clark from Motorhead. This was his band and just a phenomenal band. The first two albums especially, just great albums. But I've seen Judas Priest twice in concert. I'm a huge Priest fan. I saw Ozzy Osbourne. I saw Ozzy Osbourne with Randy Rhoads, which was phenomenal. We'll get around to talking about that here in a little bit. I've seen David Lee Roth. I've seen Alice Cooper a couple of times. I saw Cinderella, Metallica. Metallica is one of my all. They're my second favorite band behind Led Zeppelin. I've seen Queensryche a couple of times. I've seen Dokken twice, and Don Dokken, the lead singer, on his solo tour. No. I've seen just a ton of metal shows and Overkill, thrash metal band. Saw them at Harpo's. Harpo's The Dive. There's a whole bunch of others that I've seen. Here's the thing. I've seen Triumph a couple of times, but I've seen Ted Nugent, Quiet Riot, Whitesnake. Saw Whitesnake on the Slide It In tour, which was just before they blew up and became the big powerhouse that they later became. But I still have every one of my ticket stubs except one. The first time I saw Alice Cooper, that got lost somewhere.
No.
But every other ticket stub from every show that I've seen, I still have those, and I got them in a photo album. And so I mean, that's, you know, that's the metal side there.
Well, that makes it easy for you to answer the next question then. Who have you seen the most? All you got to do is go through your stubs.
Yeah, but actually the band I've seen the most would be New York. They never really caught on huge, but they had a great EP, and then their album was fantastic. I have seen these guys north of 50 times, probably closer to 100, because they used to play at the Silver Dollar Saloon all the time, and they would play there 6 nights a week, and they would play there 4 or 5 times a year, and I would go to every show. My former girlfriend and I, we became really good friends with all of the band members and their crew, and they treated us like family, and even went out of state to see them a couple of times, and here's the thing. Here a couple of years ago, I got contacted by a record company, Heaven and Hell Records, and they said they were remastering the two New York, the EP and the album, and they were going to combine it onto one CD. And they had read an article that I wrote about the band on my blog, and they approached me about writing the liner notes for it. So I did, and if you get a copy of that through Heaven and Hell Records, New York, I wrote the liner notes for that. So yeah, those are the guys that I've seen the most. Now, big bands, it would be Iron Maiden 3 times, and I'd go to see them again. We do have a call. You want to take this call?
All right.
And by the way, we got 4 minutes till the top of the hour, but we have a little leeway for overtime. So, and it's a special show, so maybe we can hang on a little longer.
And we are all special.
Yes, we are. Hello, caller. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, Beam. Hey, Steven. It's Ron and Zach from White Track.
Ooh,
all
hey.
Right,
How's
White Track. These are Michigan monsters here, man. White Track, great rock band. Get out there and check them out. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic. Just talking
music.
As I
said, I'm on the 25th floor overlooking the city, so I'm flying high.
Not doing too badly there. Happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you.
Yeah, same to you and to Zach and to your family as well.
Oh, thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Now, Ron, I know you have a interesting concert connection in that you saw the final Soundgarden show.
Ooh.
Yeah, I certainly did.
You want to share a little bit about that?
Yeah. Our YouTube channel has like all my clips from it, and I did a little blog about it. It was the weirdest thing. I went there with about 3 friends of mine, and Zach wanted to go, but it was a school night, and we said, you know what, this is like their warm-up tour, and they're probably coming back by, so we'll just go check them out when they come back by. And so tragically, he never got to see him, but so the show started off pretty upbeat, you know. It was Cornell, they played a couple songs, and then Chris Cornell addressed the crowd, and it was it was at the Fox Theater, and so he's saying to the balcony, hey, you guys, stand up and let's hear it, you know. And then he addressed the crowd in front of him. He said, hey, they're pretty loud up there. You guys got some competition. So he was kind of in good spirits, you know. And then like about 3 or 4 songs in, there was this shift in the mood. And I looked over at my friend. I was like, oh man, he doesn't sound very good on this one. And throughout the night, it sounded like he was just slightly trailing behind the rest of the band. His singing was kind of sluggish and just really hoarse. And I've seen them a lot of times, and he always sounds great live, but he did not sound good. I know a lot of people say, yeah, he sounded fine. I beg to differ. He did not sound good. And it just, as the night wore on, and you could hear it in the videos, it's like, wow, you know. And I actually sent Zach a clip of one of the songs And I said, man, there's something going on with Chris Cornell. And Zach responded, man, get that guy a drink of water. And, you know, and then it ended well enough. They ended with Slaves and Bulldozers and Rusty Cage and, you know, some of those hits. And it kind of picked up a little more steam at the end. Then obviously, you know, the rest is history. And there was some rumors that there were problems with his monitors, and he had thrown a tirade at somebody running the monitors or something like that. I don't know how true that is, but it would stand to reason. But it was pretty tragic.
Yeah, for those who don't know, the singer Chris Cornell, after that show, went back to his hotel room there in Detroit, and he hanged himself. And his wife has said that he had taken an extra anti-anxiety pill, and he was on antidepressants, and she had spoken to him just before this happened, and she knew something was wrong mentally with him. And he even admitted that he thinks he messed up and took an extra pill of the anxiety, I believe it was. And so then she got off the phone with him and called the hotel security. By the time they got up there and got in the room, he was already gone. So that's like,
yeah, there was, I guess he was taking Ativan, and by all accounts, like, that is something that's, if you take too much of it, it just apparently drives you crazy. And so, you know, I mean, this definitely wasn't the tale of the depressed rock star, you know, the cliche.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy by all evidence was just a family man. His career was just exploding again. He had a lot of things he was looking forward to.
Yeah, that's what everybody was saying, you know, that he was in a really good place. And that's, you know, and that's why his wife said it was this medication. He messed up and he hadn't taken one when he had, and then he doubled the dosage, and that's just a bad situation.
Yeah. I mean, it just blew my mind. That was like my John Lennon, you know.
Yeah.
He was definitely one of a kind. And
yeah, and I still crank out the Audio Slave stuff too all the time. I love that first album, man. It was just a great, great album from Audio Slave, and he did the vocal work on that. For those who don't know, Audio Slave was Rage Against the Machine with Chris Cornell on vocals when Zach had left Rage, and it was just some really different kind of music for both of them, and it was some good stuff.
Yeah,
well, how about
that I'm sorry. What was
I said, how about you? How about you, Zach? Who have you ever seen that most impressed you, or that really stands out to you?
Oh, you know, I mean, I've seen quite a few concerts, you know, which I'm very thankful for. But
life can be good.
The first good one I really saw, the first one that really floored me, you know, I was seeing Paul McCartney. I got really lucky. And
oh,
buddy,
gosh.
Man, I was taking a drink when you said that.
That's a legend.
Sorry, I'll warn you next time.
Paul McCartney. I still haven't seen
it. Yeah, it worked out really great. You know, got a free ticket in because of a buddy. And, you know, we had some pretty crummy seats at first. It was in, you know, Little Caesars Arena, giant place. You know, we're in the very back. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, you can't really see much. But you're a big group of people and everyone's super into it. I mean, like, what a unifying force, you know, Paul McCartney, you know. But, you know, it worked out that there's some unsold tickets for some near front row seats. And so eventually got to go down there, you know, close enough to really feel the energy. You know, it's crazy how much of a difference your placement at a concert like that can make. But I think either way, you know, it's just, you know, to experience, you know, what that man has done in however many years of living he's done and however many years of music he's done. It's just one of the most powerful experiences I think I've had. Yeah.
He was a world changer in music. You'll be able to tell that story when you're 95 years old and people will know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
And be like, wow.
Because anytime I tell him, like, hey, I saw such and such and such and such, you know, he's like, did you ever see Paul McCartney? No, I saw Ringo.
Oh, you saw Ringo, huh? Okay. Well, at least you saw a Beatle.
Yeah, right.
Well,
yeah,
was it the Ringo All Star Band?
Yeah.
Okay, who did he have with him when you?
Yeah,
saw
he had good people in those lineups.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, he had Simon Kirk from Bad Company.
Ooh.
And Todd Rundgren, and it was surprisingly one of those just good time shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good people.
Some bands, you know, you go and you see, like, and you're just studying, you know. But that one was just a fun time. But there's
wow.
so many, you know. I'm jealous of Beam's list there. I never got to see Randy Rhoads.
I was kind of saving a little story on that. For when we got to the portion of the show that those who are no longer here, but we may not get to that, so I'll just kind of throw it out here. Went to go see Ozzy. It was 6 weeks before Randy Rhoads got killed, and we got there. I had probably 17th row seats, but in my younger days, I did not stay in my seat. And this is back before they had security all over the place saying you can't be up here if you don't have a ticket. And as soon as the show starts, I would make my way up to the front and I would squeeze my way, a small guy, you know, I was almost 15. That was a month before I turned 15. So I squeezed my way up to the front and I was like right up there, 10 feet from Ozzy, 15 feet from Randy. And I didn't know who Randy was, but I knew who Ozzy was. And I knew Randy's playing on the two albums that Ozzy had done as a solo artist. But, Randy started playing, man, and I was just watching his fingers on that guitar. You know, he was like 5'2", and the polka dot V was almost as big as him. But just watching his fingers, it was mesmerizing. And then Ozzy would be walking around, and you know, I was there to see Ozzy. But Ozzy would get in the way. I'm thinking, get out of the way, man. Let me see this guy's fingers.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to see this guy playing the guitar. I had never seen anybody play guitar like that. And then, you know, great show. Then I remember 6 weeks later sitting at the breakfast table, and my mom started reading the article in the paper about Randy Rhoads, guitarist for Ozzy Osbourne, killed in a plane crash. And I was just like, wow. That was the first person that I had ever seen in concert that died. There's a whole bunch of them now since then. But
wow.
That remains my all-time favorite show just because of Randy Rhoads.
I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, but there was like a shift when he passed away. I think there was like an article in Guitar Player magazine that really gives him a great tribute. And it's like his influence just exploded he became really known as just like the most humble musician's musician, you know?
Yeah.
And of course you had Eddie Van Halen who was occupying that territory, but Randy Rhoads was kind of a little bit more of a, you know, a little less of a partying kind of musician, and it was just a great role model to grow up with.
Randy was the neoclassical player, whereas Eddie was more blues-based, and you were right about the shift because, you know, after Randy, you started seeing more of the neoclassical style playing. This gave birth to Yngwie Malmsteen. It opened the doors for him because he plays that neoclassical style as well. Although Yngwie is
a
completely different
point.
Personality than Randy. Yngwie is arrogant and Randy was humble.
It's funny because I never really credited Randy with starting that, but I think
he didn't really start it because Ritchie Blackmore was doing the neoclassical thing in the 70s, but Randy kicked the door open. Suddenly, you know, especially with his death, and I think that his death had an impact that I want to be like that. So you started seeing more of these kids. I remember prior to that, my cousin's a fantastic guitar player, and he was in a touring band all through the 80s and then through the 90s and into the early 2000s, Brooke Krieger. And he opened for Alice in Chains with his band, and they did shows with Kix, and I mean, just a lot of these 80s bands. And through him, I got to know a lot of guitar players, because he taught for a while too. When he was 16, he was teaching guitar. And I remember a lot of the kids that were playing guitar, that were taking lessons at Marshall Music in Lansing, they'd be playing the Eddie Van Halen stuff. And then it seemed like almost overnight, as soon as, you know, Randy had passed away, you started hearing these kids focusing on that classical metal fusion. And it was, you could see that, like you mentioned, a shift. And it was because of Randy, not Ritchie Blackmore. Even though he was doing it first, it was because of Randy.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and even now, like, Zach's learned quite a bit of Randy's stuff, and his influence is still powerful.
Yeah, I've had the opportunity to communicate with his sister through Instagram a few times, because I had put this picture up of when I was in high school. I had my Randy Rhoads tribute wall, memorial wall, in my bedroom. I had all my walls were just covered in posters, and one whole side of the room was all Randy Rhoads stuff. And I had, when I was, I think, 17, I had my picture taken in front of it, and I had this Cortez Les Paul copy, and it was identical to the cream colored Gibson Les Paul that Randy had. So I was standing in front of a poster with him playing that, and I shared that on Instagram, and Randy's sister saw that, and she would just like that. She said, "That is beautiful. You know, thanks for sharing that." And then from there, we communicated
awesome.
A time or two after that. And just, they were a good family, the whole family. They were, all of them, even his older brother, just rock solid people.
Oh man, yeah, it really seems so. And they were all, didn't his mom run a music school?
She ran Musonia, and she passed away like at the age of 93 or 94 here a few years back. Yeah, I mean, she used to give, you go on YouTube and there's interviews with her, and she's, you know, telling you the story about how Randy started playing and how all of her kids started playing. She was a musician herself, and Randy could play flute. And he would come home from when he was in Quiet Riot. They would play the clubs at night, and he'd come home, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning, and she'd have coffee on, and he'd go in there and play flute with her while she was playing piano, and they would just play these classical pieces and jazz. And if
wow.
you're partying in a band, you can't do that because you're ready to pass out by that. But Randy
yeah.
wasn't a partier, so he's home and he's ready to hang with mom. And that's what I always thought was cool about him.
Yeah.
So,
okay,
let's try to knock out a couple more of these categories before we have to pull the plug on this.
Yeah, we're getting close here. Let's just bounce down to a couple. How about who have you waited the longest to see?
Okay. For me, the one I waited the longest to see was Metallica, although I saw them in 1988. I saw them in 1988, but I was a fan almost from the beginning, 83. So for me, that was like 5 years. I wanted to see them, and I kept missing them whenever they would come around. Finally, when I was in Florida at the Lee County Civic Center, they were down there with Queensryche on the Operation Mindcrime opening for them. This was 88. Now, I said I had missed them. I went to see the Monsters of Rock show in 88. At the Pontiac Silverdome, and that was Kingdom Come, Metallica, Scorpions, Dokken, and Van Halen with Sammy Hagar. We got there and missed. We got there too late. We took a motorcycle down there, a buddy of mine, and his motorcycle overheated while we were taking the little slow route to get into the Pontiac Silverdome. So we got there late, didn't catch Metallica, and I was angry because I'm never going to get a chance to see him. Thanks a lot for your stupid motorcycle guy. But then later that year, I relocated to Florida, and it was in 89. As a matter of fact, it was Valentine's Day, 1989. They came to the Civic Center down there, and I got tickets for me and for my little brother, and just a great show. So that's probably the longest the band that I really wanted to see, 5 years, from the start of getting into them until I finally got to see them.
Well, I thought of two. One is, when I was 11, 12, 13, 14, Alice Cooper was big. New album every year, Killer, Love It to Death, Billion Dollar Babies. you know, the song School's Out is probably still generating tens of millions of dollars a year for him. I played Alice Cooper songs in bands that I was in and all that, but I never saw him. It took me like 40 something years to go see Alice Cooper finally. And I went and saw him two tours in a row and just had fun. Felt 12 again. That was pretty cool. But the other one for me, it took me like 30 years to see Steely Dan. And the reason for that is because Steely Dan never toured. They hated to play live shows. And if they did, they'd play like New York and L.A. and that'd be the end of it. So I finally got to see Steely Dan a couple years ago. Turned out to be the final tour before Walter Becker died. So I got my Steely Dan in just in time.
Wow.
Pick another
Ron,
category, Beam.
Hold on a second, Ron. Who have you waited the longest to see?
You know, the first guy that came to my mind was Steve Miller. For years and years, I'd heard about what a fun time, you know, it was going to see Steve Miller. And every year I wanted to go, I had a gig. So 1 year lined up, and this was probably only within the last 10 years. And then, of course, I took Zach to see him the last time he was here. But, just another, like you said, Stephen, like just a fun time. You're reliving the memories of growing up with those songs, and you know some kinds of. Zach and I went to see Hall & Oates as well. That was another one that that was like we all kind of a bucket list, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Okay. How about the No Longer With Us?
Okay.
Who have you seen that really standout performers that's just not with us anymore and you can never go see him again?
Randy Rhoads. For me, Randy Rhoads. That was the one. But there's a bunch of them that have passed away that I've seen over the years. I saw the Japanese metal band Loudness back in 85 opening for Motley Crue.
Yeah.
Their drummer passed away.
Wow, I never heard of them.
Loudness? Oh, man, they were a great band.
Higuchi, I think was his last name.
Well, they the
drummer
only two I remember. The drummer, the original drummer there, he passed away from cancer, I believe it was, some time ago. The band is still around, but I don't think it's any of the guys that today. But the only two names I remember was the singer's name was Minoru Niraha, and the guitar player, who was phenomenal, Akira Takasaki.
Yeah, the bass player was Masayata Yamashita.
Yeah.
And the drummer was Minetaka Higuchi.
Yeah,
he
passed away.
Hmm.
Yeah, Zach and I are pretty big fans of those guys.
I love that. That was a great show, man.
They've got an album called Disillusion that's just phenomenal. It's like Japanese Van Halen. with Ricky Blackmore-ish guitarist, it's really cool. But I'd have to go with Chris Squire for the great.
Chris Squire's
no
on my list. Chris Squire's on my list, definitely. You know, Chris Squire owned the name Yes, so every version of Yes that ever existed, he was the only person who was in every one of them. Because if Chris wasn't there, then he couldn't be Yes. Now that he's gone, his estate has licensed two bands to use it. It's two different versions of different members from the original versions, like John Anderson and Rick Wakeman are together, and then Steve Howe and Alan White and Jeff Downs are together. But yeah, Chris Squire, he was the hub around Centered Yes. Who else you got?
Ronnie James Dio.
I saw Dio. That's a big one, man. My all-time favorite metal singer. Singer, period.
Oh, yeah.
Dio.
Never saw him.
Yeah, I saw him in 85 on the Sacred Heart Tour. Rough Cut opened for him.
Yeah.
Yep. Dio, man.
All right. I got to thinking about the jazz world, and here's one for you. I got to see Miles Davis perform at the Cincinnati Jazz Festival, and I also got at the same festival to see Chick Corea acoustic conversion of his acoustic band play. And then when Miles Davis came out to his set, Chick Corea played keyboards with him, just as he had all the way back to the original Bitches Brew album.
Bitches Brew album. I've got that
I
album.
Got to see that, and it was not long after that that Miles died. So that's a big one for me. Another big one for me, Emerson and Lake. Okay. Speaking of jazz,
didn't you see Brubeck?
Yep, that's right. Yeah. He's gone now.
He's gone.
I saw Brubeck twice.
I've got several Brubeck albums that I play regularly.
Is Bob James gone now too?
I don't know.
Man, I think I read that a couple years ago. Because I got to see Bob James a couple of times, one time at Meadowbrook with Alexander Zonjic on flute. And they were the originals who together played Angela, which most people know is the theme song to Taxi, the sitcom Taxi. But that was terrific, too. But what I started to say there is Emerson and Lake, probably my biggest of Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. And I'm going to throw in Cozy Powell, because for one tour, Emerson, Lake, and Powell. And Cozy Powell's gone now, too. He died in a car wreck in Jersey, I think.
I saw him with Whitesnake. He was playing drums for Whitesnake.
Yep. Oh, man, he was impressive. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he Greg Lake died of cancer, but Keith Emerson, not unlike Peter Frampton, had a neurological disease that was just getting close to him having a problem with it. And he was trying to get his career going again and do some more memorable things while he had some time. And he had put together a tour that was starting in Japan, and they were in rehearsals for the tour, and he was having trouble controlling one of his hands. And he got very despondent about that. And then I don't know much more about the story, but a few weeks later he shot himself to death. And that was a big loss in the music world, because I'm a keyboard player and Keith Emerson was one of my heroes back to when I was 11 years old. So no longer with
us. He's the man.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was the best in my book.
Right. And Zach hasn't been around long enough to lose very many of his music heroes yet. But
believe me, I am well aware how transient all this stuff is. You know, I mean, it feels like reliving through some of this history, just watching all these videos and experiencing the music that these people poured their hearts and souls into. You know, I mean, you mentioned Keith Emerson, and even as a guitarist, you know, I've tried to transcribe some of his stuff onto guitar.
Good luck.
just to get that connection, I suppose. To put it poetically, I may be so bold, but no, I mean, there's countless musicians that I'm, even if I haven't seen in the flesh, I'm indebted to in a way.
There's my number one. You're staring me right in the face.
You said Neil Peart?
Yeah. I've seen him every tour since '82, and he was my hero growing up. Still is.
Yeah, well, you're a drummer too. Yeah. And I never got a chance to see Rush. I saw Triumph twice, the other, you know, power metal trio from Canada, but never saw Rush.
Yeah, they were great. Yeah.
Okay, let's jump to the last category here, best concert ever, starting with Zach.
All right. Well, I'd have to say my best concert was probably the last concert I went to, unless I'm forgetting something. But if I am, it probably just reaffirms that this one's the best anyways, right? But, I got to see some of my favorite newer bands at St. Andrew's Hall. It was an
issue. That's still going, huh?
Show, but they had Polyphia, Sleep Token, and a few other bands opening up for them, and it was an amazing show. I mean, Sleep Token was great, you know. I mean, my father and I have both really gotten into their music, but Polyphia, of course, is some of the coolest new guitar players, which is of course my weakness. So I was super, super thrilled to see him.
And how about Ron?
The best band performance I've ever seen at a concert was the Mars Volta in 2005 at the State Theater. I've never seen a group of musicians play like that before. I was completely bowled over, completely surprised at how much they eclipsed pretty much anything I'd seen to that point. I mean, I knew I was going to like the show, but I remember walking out with the guys I was with and just like dumbfounded looking at each other. I said, I think that was the best thing I've ever seen. And they were like, yep. Yeah, it was.
Yep.
And, you know, it was cool. It was cool seeing a band that was combining progressive rock, and they had a little bit of a Santana thing, but they had a lot of, like, the drummer reminded me of Elvin Jones, but only playing hard rock, like Elvin Jones, John Bonham kind of thing. Hmm. And just monster musicians, but they were all, they had this punk rock kind of energy where they were just spastically jumping around, but still playing precisely. And they were all, you know, kind of grounded in this Latin culture that just gave things a really nice feel. That's I always tell people that was the best thing I've ever seen as far as a band just blowing me away.
And can't see it again either.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's a hard category for me because there's so many of those moments where it's like that is the best one you've ever seen. I mean, I've seen Genesis when Peter Gabriel was still the lead singer. I mean, you know, there's just some of those kinds of shows you look back at them and they're not going to happen again, or in some cases they could, but just aren't very likely. But as I thought about this category, what I came up with was a Return to Forever concert. Now, Return to Forever was a Chick Corea band. Chick Corea has had like 15 different bands and sometimes all at the same time, sometimes all touring at the same time. I've seen him with three different bands in the same city within 1 week. But and I'm not joking on that. Return to Forever was when he and Stanley Clarke on bass put together different versions of modern fusion jazz bands. And they finally settled on a version that had the two of them, Al DiMeola on guitar and Lenny White on drums. And a lot of people talk about Billy Cobham in jazz drumming, and they don't know that Billy Cobham was a student of Lenny White's. And
Romantic
Lenny's
warrior.
Okay. Well, you jumped ahead to which one it was. The three times they did tours with that foursome, just those four musicians.
Oh,
and
God.
All three of those albums, the way they did it was every song on the album was electric jazz fusion. But the last song, which was also the name of the album, was acoustic. And when they did the concert, they would come out and they would do an electric concert for like 2.5 hours of just the songs on that album, you know, doing 7-minute songs into 15, 20-minute versions, adding leads and just doing all kinds of stuff with them. And then they would take an intermission. They'd haul all the electric equipment off the stage, bring out rugs and potted plants, and have just acoustic instruments there. And the whole second half of the concert would be the last song for like an hour, hour and 15, hour and 20. They did it with Where Have I Known You Before. Then they did it with No Mystery, which was the first Chick Corea song I ever learned to play on the piano. It took me a month and it's just special to me. And then the third and final time that group ever did a tour was the Romantic Warrior tour. And the Romantic Warrior concert, it was at the Masonic Auditorium in Detroit, and it's a life-changing event. And it's a show you'll never see again, although all of those musicians are still alive. Maybe they could get along for a little while. But how about you, Beam? Best concert ever.
Well, we got about 90 seconds left before we get cut off, so I'm going to throw that back out there. The Randy Rhoads Ozzy show is my all-time favorite, but Metallica and Justice for All tour, they were still young. Had just gotten the new album out, and Justice for All, the new bass player, Jason Newsted, they were on fire, metal as ever. I mean, the heaviest they've ever been. And, that to me, that was pure heaven. That was just a great show. But,
okay, this has been fun, people. Marcia Fox next week, author Marcia Fox.
Thank you to Robert McKenzie, Verwayne Greenhall, Zach and Ron Tippin. Thank you guys for calling in and being part of this, and we'll see you again next week.
Thanks for inviting us, you guys.
Thank you.
All right. See ya.
Later, everybody.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.